Welcome to the Creative South Podcast. I'm your host, Jason Frostholm. This week, I'm talking with IBM design principal Owen Hammonds. We chat about how IBM uses design thinking to create more empathy within products and divisions, working outside the digital realm on side projects as a way to reset your brain, his role with AIGA Austin and what he's learned as chapter president, and more, all right after this. It's no secret that I love Jack Prince. They're a longtime sponsor of the podcast and Creative South. Plus, they do great work. Whether they're making our pop-up displays and tablecloths or printing notebooks, Jack Prince is always there when we need them. This year, they are printing new Creative South t-shirts for me and the podcast stickers. They have a coupon code on the back that gives you a great discount on all of their products, just in time for Creative South. Speaking of stickers, Jack Prince will print any kind, shape, size, or stock, including full-color stickers with full-color liner prints, for you to use as product labels, promotions, bumper stickers, hang tags, business cards, and more. Right now, you can get 500 3x3-inch die-cut stickers, starting at $149. Plus, Jack Prince is giving Creative South podcast listeners 15% off all orders over $25 when you use promo code CREATE15CS at checkout. Visit jackprince.com for your next order of stickers, prints, or whatever you need today. If you like the Creative South podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon. Every dollar helps us cover hosting costs, upgrade equipment, and keep the podcast going. With options starting at just $1 per month, you can help support the podcast and even wind up with some cool Creative South podcast swag. When you become a Creative South patron, you'll get access to exciting Creative South news before anyone else, a shout out on the podcast thanking you for your support, Creative South podcast stickers and t-shirts. So, please, help support the podcast by becoming a patron over at patreon.com/creativesouth. Owen, thanks for joining me this evening.
Well, thank you for having me, Jason.
So let's dive right into things. Where did you grow up?
I am originally from Louisville, Kentucky.
And you pronounced it correctly. I'm happy to hear that.
Not many people know that. So yeah,
I went to high school in Kentucky, in Campbellsville. So it's about 80 miles away.
Okay.
Literally the geographic center of Kentucky.
Oh wow! On the way to Nashville.
Yeah, kind of. So. Cool. So when you were growing up, what were you into?
I was into a lot of mixture of things. I think it was mainly because my mom, I grew up in a single parent family. So my mom kind of like kept me busy with a lot of different stuff. I ran track. I played football in high school, a lot of things. But, you know, one of the things that I remember the most from middle and high school was people coming to me asking me to, you know, do design work for it. Well, I didn't know it was design work, but they would be like, hey, you know, draw the school mascot for me.
And sure.
You know, so we can put it on a brochure cover, or can you lay out this brochure cover thing for me? And so we can run it off the Xerox copier in the office. So, so I was into a lot of different things. And of course I was heavily into art a lot. Doing illustrations and different mixed media stuff as well too.
Very cool. So when you were going through school, were you taking art as pretty much every elective you could get, or what were you focusing on? Like, I'm talking high school level stuff.
Oh yeah. So pretty much, yeah, definitely a lot of art stuff. I was following my brother's footsteps, cause he went to the high school before me, and he was known for being the artist in school. And I think a lot of people, well, particularly the teachers, because they all had him. So I had them when I went to high school, thought that I could
put
do
the
all.
Pressure on you.
Right. They put the pressure on me, and they thought I can do the same work that he could do. And it's like, not even close. I was never as good of a fine artist as he was, but I was mainly more into a lot of the design work or commercial art at that time, or whatever it was called then.
Sure, sure. So when you get out of high school, do you go to college? Do you start working? What do you do?
So actually, even before I graduated, I joined the Army. So I spent the first 4 years of I joined my junior year of high school. So the end of that year, I joined, and it was called the split option program. And I joined, came back to high school, finished up my senior year of school, and then went active duty after that. So I spent the first 4 years after high school, or during the middle of high school, in the Army.
Oh, really?
Yep.
What were you doing in the Army? What was your specialty?
I was they call 54 Bravo, so chemical warfare specialist.
Oh, that's not fun.
No, not really. Walking around in heavy chemical suits is no ideal of fun. But I also joined mainly during that time. It was during Desert Storm, and there's a huge chemical threat because of the Saddam Hussein and his chemical weapons stockpile. So they were pretty much pushing everyone into chemical warfare specialty who joined at that time.
Oh, the minute you said chemical warfare, I knew exactly where around when you joined up.
Yeah.
Which means we're roughly the same age.
Yeah.
So do you just do a 4-year tour, or do you stick around a little bit after that and do reserve work?
I did reserves. So I did two tours, one active, one reserve. So a total of 8 years altogether.
Okay.
And the last couple years in that 8 year span was when I actually started going to community college and started taking some classes just to see where I wanted to go and what I wanted to do at that time then.
Mm-hmm. And at the time when you were taking those classes, did you figure out then that you wanted to do design again, or what were you thinking when you started back?
You know, I think it was the typical all over the place kind of college student.
Let me get math and biology out of the way,
right,
and then
exactly.
I'll figure it out after that.
Yeah, I went into journalism for a little bit. I went into marketing some, and then I, you know, at that time, I found a class called commercial art, and at that time, it was a lot of marker rendering and you know, sketches and drawings and things like that that a lot of commercial artists did at the time. You know, and that was paste up, and you know, you had to do all that old school stuff that's cool now.
Yeah.
So that's what I started taking and got back into remembering. Actually, like, oh, this is the stuff I used to do when I was in high school. And so I kind of found my footing in doing that work in commercial art, and then I finally went to I transferred actually from community college, Jefferson Community College, to Northern Kentucky University up by Cincinnati for the last, and finished up my degree there.
Okay, and did you finish up in design, traditional design?
I got a BFA in design and a BS in psychology, actually.
Oh, so you put in double the work in half the time.
Right, yeah. Well, fortunately, yeah. I kind of enjoyed doing that as well, too. It was amazing how much I use psychology in my design work today.
Sure, I can imagine. And I want to get back to that in a minute, but I want to know first, you know, when you got out of college, what did you end up doing?
So before I graduated, I actually, in my senior portfolio class, I was fortunate that most of my professors were adjunct professors. So they were working professionals. They came and they taught in the evening and got a lot of really great knowledge from them because they were applying real projects to us and putting the same strain that they actually had in a work at their day-to-day work on us. And so they brought in working professionals to come and do our critiques at night as well too. And,
oh, cool.
And one of the critiquers, John Carpenter, came to my class in my senior portfolio class and saw my work, and my professor had a critique. It was good critique. And probably like a week or 2 weeks later, my professor, Bob Johnson, came to me and said, like, hey, you remember John who came into the class? And I was like, yeah, he wants to, you know, interview you for a position at his company. And I'm like, What? okay, so what's next? because I at that point I had no, I have never applied for a design job ever. So I was like, Bob, my teacher, worked with me and he helped me put together my portfolio. And at that time it was the big black, you know, 2x4 leather case.
I still have a couple of those in my closet somewhere.
Wow. And it was put together and I went in, I interviewed and had like a series of interviews that entire day. And they offered me a position. I was like, you know, I really wanted to finish school. They're offering me a full-time job and there was no way I can do both of those at the same time. So I worked out a deal with them to, you know, I'll work part-time. And it was a great opportunity too, as well too, to just kind of like test to see if I really wanted to commit full time to working at an agency, then as well too. So I worked there for an entire year and then they, you know, they extended a full time offer to me after that as well.
Gotcha. How long did you stay there?
I stayed at Benchmark for 9 years.
Oh, wow. That's a long time.
Yeah, it was great. I had a lot of, you know, for my first position, I had a lot of great mentors. They're still my mentors today. And it was just a lot of great work because we just didn't work on, you know, advertising or we just didn't work on packaging. I got an opportunity to work on several things from packaging to advertising to marketing materials, illustration. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a full service shop that Benchmark was. And it was a great opportunity to start out my career in.
Gotcha. Looking back on it, what do you think is the probably one of the most important things you learned in your time there?
I think it's probably just being a good listener. When I first started, I'm sure I made the mistakes of like just trying to please everyone and just doing the best work that I can, but I'm not really listening to the instructions that they're giving me.
Sure.
Even the very first night I was there or the first week I was there, I actually had to put together a 100 and something page catalog for one of the creative directors and proudly put it together the way that I thought it should have been put together. And I really didn't pay attention to the instructions that he gave me. And so when I gave him the book, he picked it up, looked at it, looked at me, and just literally tossed it across the production room. And he's like, I told you, do not do it this way. I want you to do it that way. And I was like, all right, lesson learned. Number one, listen to Ray. I think.
Number two, Ray's kind of a jerk.
But it was an important lesson to learn of, you know, just being humble and don't think that you have to be there to please everyone, you know, just because they're there for the most part. A lot of them there to help you out and, you know, help you be successful because if you're not successful, they're not successful as well. So it was a great place to start out my career.
Gotcha. While you were working there and growing, aside from the people that you worked with, was there a community of other people in the creative field and design field that you were able to bounce ideas off of, hang out with, any of that stuff?
Oh, yeah. Fortunately for Cincinnati, which is where I was at the time, it was an amazing opportunity. There was two great organizations that were planted there. One was the Art Directors Club of Cincinnati, which is now defunct. But it was a great organization of, you know, just mainly focused art directors that really I learned a lot of how to do the proper art direction of illustrators and photographers. And it's a great community to be in. And then the other community, which is what I'm still a part of now, is AIGA Cincinnati. Which I'm now part of AIGA Austin here.
It would be really weird if you were still a part of AIGA Cincinnati.
that would
be really hard to make those meetings.
Yeah, that would be, you know, I'm always Skyping in.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about you, but I'm part of AIGA in my town, I mean, I know you are, but I have a hard enough time making the meetings that I want to get to, and they're 20 minutes away.
Yeah. So yeah, those were two awesome communities to be a part of and great communities to, you know, bounce ideas off of and even bring ideas to the table to, for new programs or new initiatives. And that's kind of like why I'm still involved today, being on the executive board for Austin chapter of, bringing things to the table that people, either want or need. Or are really just, you know, filling in the gaps when it comes to, you know, helping people make their next step in their career as well, too. Because AIGA has been that organization for me.
What's your role within your chapter now?
So right now I'm chapter president.
So you got a heavy burden to bear there.
Just a little bit. I'm going into my third year, actually. So this will be my final year as on the executive board.
Gotcha. Are you looking forward to the break when you're done?
I am so much looking forward to break. It's a lot of fun. I have a great chapter. It's definitely different. Every chapter is different because, you know, it's based off the city and the need of the city. But you know, Austin's a different type of city in general because we have two very strong markets, or a couple markets, but two very strong markets as far as a very strong traditional print community, and also a very strong technology UX community as well too. So that our chapter has to kind of service both of those communities.
So as president, how are you helping direct your team and the, you know, the other committees and the other executive board members to meet both of those needs?
So our chapter actually puts on a lot of programs, and sometimes I would say we put on too many programs, but it's good to have, you know, we have a really energized board. And, you know, part of the board really one of the big things that we do as a chapter is that we focus on the local talent. We have a lot of really strong, talented people here from, you know, up and coming all the way up to senior level professionals, that have been in Austin since the beginning of the, you know, starting that design community here. And so we really tap into them to like really help the other, you know, the larger audience that is in Austin to, you know, help educate them, provide them historical references of where Austin was and where Austin is going. So a lot of our opportunities and programming is even just, you know, tapping into our local talent. So we don't really bring in a lot of, you know, I would say, quote unquote, big name talent. Compared to other chapters, and we do it when there's gaps, but for the most part, you know, we really want to tap into our local talent and, you know, elevate them and give them a platform to help their peers with their knowledge.
Gotcha. With the two separate, you know, kind of communities that you're bridging the gap with, what challenges do you run into with that?
I think probably one of the bigger challenges is helping those communities recognize that they're all are experiencing the same problems. One of those big problems is just keeping a pulse on what's needed to be a successful designer in our market today. Everyone needs that. So it's really, and it may be for traditional print designer, just being up to date on the newest technologies or understanding that a lot of our consumers really want to be talked to versus talked at. And so that's, you know, being that active listener and being like keeping a pulse on what they need. And then in the technology sector, a lot of those things are the same thing, you know, which is, you know, instead of creating another app or another website, you know, let's make sure that we're developing something or the right vehicle that whoever is our audience really needs to either do their job or to, you know, to do that, to get services from the city or different things like that as well too. And all of those things require us to, you know, just really tap into and understand who our users are, who are the people using the products and services, or reading the advertising or the posters that we're putting out there in the market then.
Gotcha. How, because we haven't talked about what your role is yet, but I'm curious, is, you know, with your experiences in the AAGA and specifically your experience as the president of the chapter there, how have you been able to take that back to your job at IBM and implement things?
So that is kind of my job at IBM, actually. It's
I knew it when I asked.
Yeah.
I want your take on it.
So my role at IBM, I'm a design principal, and I am also a design thinking chapter leader for the HR organization within IBM, so the global HR organization.
Sure.
And my role is to help spread the practice of design thinking across the HR organization, which means I'm coaching other people who want to adopt this practice and in their day-to-day work too. So I do a lot of office hours. I do a lot of monthly meetups, helping people understand how to apply design thinking in their day-to-day practice as well too. And so internally, I take that practice and I actually practice it outside as well too with the AIGA chapter, where we do design thinking workshops. We just did a program called Changemaker, which is we selected 4 different nonprofits in the city, and we're working with them to help them build better services for their audience that they're doing work with as well too. And a larger part of those nonprofits are working with the homeless.
Okay. So I'm curious, walk me through design thinking, because, you know, we're about the same age, you know, I'm based on math and how long it took me to get through college. Probably been in career about as long. Mm-hmm. Design thinking was not a term 20 years ago. Design thinking really wasn't a term 2 years ago.
Right.
And now it's kind of taken off as this thing. And, you know, for people who either don't understand it or let's go with this. For people who don't understand it, explain what it is, and then I'll ask my next question.
there's multiple descriptors out there, but I would describe design thinking as a framework for understanding your users so you can develop better services, offerings for them, for what they need to do their work or understand the services that you're providing for them. As far as getting started, I will say, like, for a lot of people, you really just need to understand where you are currently. I literally and intentionally am not calling it a quote process, because we describe it more as a framework, because you have to really understand where you are in that framework and then go from there to start moving forward to understanding what your users need so you can develop a better offering for them then. So if you're already, you know, for IBM, for instance, it's my day-to-day work example. We have a lot of legacy products. So we have to understand right now what's the current.
I mean, the company's only like 100 and some years old.
Oh, so. just a couple hundred years old. but, you know, we have to understand what are the current problems or opportunities that are on the existing product, and then go actually talk to people of like how they're using that product. What are the roadblocks that they're running into? And then once we understand those and actually talk to the real people, not the president, not the CIO, not the salesperson is going to drop $1 million on a product, but the actual people who use that product day to day. Once we understand the problem from them, then we can actually take it back and actually work as a, which is one of the things I love the most about design thinking, is working as a radical collaborative team which means mm-hmm. you're working directly with the developer, you may be working with the salespeople, you may be working with marketing, maybe you're also working with the offering manager to all come together because they all have different pieces of knowledge that they can bring to like help solve or make this experience better for the user. But they all have some knowledge to like help bring that to life then. And then we're all moving forward at the same time, instead of, which is what I, you know, worked with, and I'm sure you probably worked with it well too, Jason, which is waterfalling.
Sure.
It's like, hey, I got this done. Catch. Yeah. Hope it works out for you.
So I'm curious because, you know, if you spend any time on Twitter, there's been a big pushback against design thinking. Mm-hmm. And I, like, from my point of view, when design thinking came out, I definitely had to ask, what the heck is this? And then when I found it out, I was like, oh, so the stuff I've been doing all along
right.
is just putting a name to it.
Mm-hmm.
But I think a lot of people, especially a lot of people who are younger in the tech community, who hear it all of the time, are pushing back on that term. How do you, internally, how do you combat that? And then within AIGA, how do you educate against that?
I think one of the, I will ask your second question first, actually.
Okay.
As a chapter, we want to make sure that our role as a chapter is to make sure everyone, we provide the services to make sure everyone has an opportunity to have a successful design career. Mm-hmm. Design thinking is one of those things, and it's that allows people to help really kind of combat one of the common problems that I hear a lot of in our day-to-day workspaces, which is collaboration.
Sure.
Design thinking allows the ability to create a common language. So I'm not talking about development. I'm not talking about typefaces and fonts and different things like that. I'm mm-hmm. actually talking about this user is having this problem, and it is up to us together to like help solve it together then. So mm-hmm. it's less about our disciplines and more about putting that user in the center there. And that's one of those things that when we were, advertising our next design thinking workshop or any program that is going to be centered around creating that common language, we put that out there as like, this is what it does and this is what it can help do.
No,
it's not a silver bullet, as I tell many of my managers at IBM, or that are new to understanding design thinking, or they see another team that use design thinking, they got great successful outcomes from it. Their immediate thing that they come to us, or they go to another team, is like, hey, I want you to do a design thinking workshop, and I want you to do it in 4 hours, and I want results by the end of the week. And it's like, that's not design thinking.
No, that's cramming a bunch of stuff in and hoping something sticks.
Right, exactly. Or like, or putting something up in front of your executives and saying like, oh yeah, we did design thinking, this is what we got to. It's like, that's, you're just setting up your team for failure there.
Mm-hmm.
So to the initial question around internally, we have, fortunately at IBM, IBM has been going through this design transformation for the past about 5 years now.
Mm-hmm.
And in those 5 years, we've built great cases to help us, and share what design thinking can do, whether you're in hardware or you're in software, or if you're where I'm at in HR, like offering services. So we have a lot of really great case studies to like help share out to the other executives and managers of what design thinking can do for their product or services there. And the initial, when we started it, we didn't have that. So we were really, going by, say, trust us, give us one project on your team and let us roll through, utilizing this framework to help get to a solution. And, you know, the big thing, and I think the biggest win for us was before we even really started on any projects, Jenny Rometty, CEO of the company, had her executive team go through it. So they went through a design thinking education training to understand what it was, what it could do, what the common language that it will create between them as, you know, leaders of products or services and with their team who are doing the product and services there as well too then.
Okay. So I'm curious if you think design thinking and that approach is the right fit for every organization.
No. I think that it is one of the things that we do as for myself, definitely as a workshop leader, design thinking workshop leader, is that we always do pre-assessments. Mm-hmm. We want to understand what the problem is that we're trying to solve. We're trying to understand who the users are. And in that assessment, that's the time to raise our hands to say, like, you know what, this is probably not the best methodology for trying to solve your problem. But here are some ways that we can probably solve your problem that are not necessarily related to design thinking there. A lot of times I find that teams are, you know, they actually have like interpersonal problems and they want to use design thinking to solve them. It's like,
no, that's not going
to
fix that. You need a therapist for that.
Yeah, you need a therapist, you know.
That's what the HR part of your job comes into.
Yes.
So with that and with it not being right for everyone, what are some, I guess, like, what's the top five list of identifying if it's right for your organization or if it's not right for your organization?
Oh, wow.
It doesn't have to be top five, just whatever you think.
Yeah, it's... I think one of the biggest wins for us, like I mentioned before, is that it has to be a top-down initiative. It doesn't work really well if someone just wants to kind of squeeze it in the middle. It's going to get rubbed the wrong way from both ends, and it will just never take off there that way. I would say another one is that it's good for products, it's good for services, but you have to be really selective of the, it's not meant for every piece of services. And it's kind of hard to describe like what products it is good for and what services it's good for. Mm. But it's one of those things that can like really, what happens when some teams that have never really delved into their product or the experience of their product really from in the end, what it tends to do, in which really I find what happens with some teams is that it actually unravels a lot of things that are problems on the product or service. And so once they start to see, oh my gosh, we have all these issues with the product, where do we start? And instead of like trying to like take a really bigger step back and reflect on what they have in front of them and, you know, and working to let's prioritize these problems that we discovered, they will just kind of like bundle it all back together and go back to the way they were working then. Because that's easier for them to do that.
Sure. Well, change is hard.
Right. It is.
Change is scary. All that fun stuff. So. Within that, let's put a pin in that for a minute, and kind of get into a little bit more of what your job specifically entails. Because you like you said, we started off and we just gave the 30-second soundbite of what you're doing, but your design principle within the global HR, is that correct?
Right.
So how does that, because there's some, IBM's such a huge company.
Yeah.
And there's other design principles there within other departments and things like that. How does that work where everybody's, you get everybody on the same page and move forward and, you know, still meet the objectives and goals of the individual departments?
Right. So the role of the design principal is, we're really focused on the craft of design at IBM. Like I mentioned before, you know, design is new at IBM. We have a history of design.
Sure. You
know, Paul Rand, Charles Ray Eames, several great people that have contributed, you know, signatory projects to IBM, but we never really had a formal practice, discipline of design at IBM. And so our role as design principals is to focus on that craft, where we will have design directors that focus on the management of designers at IBM there.
Okay.
And so, so with that clarity, my day-to-day role is to help elevate craft within the HR, within the designers, within our HR organization at IBM.
Okay.
So I have about like 90 plus designers that are global across IBM. And what I do two things with them. Like one is, you know, I do guild workshops with them. So I actually, we call them the design guild, and I actually do workshops with them where I may bring in guest speakers. We actually just had Mike Abenink, who actually created the IBM Plex typeface. IBM.
I knew the name. I couldn't remember why.
Yeah. So we brought him in, and he actually, you know, he Skyped in and he did like a thorough background of like how he developed the entire typeface, which blew their minds. Because they realized how much work it went into developing a typeface. And that was just, you know, the US base. Now he's working on other Latin and non-Latin languages as well, too, with that typeface.
Oh, God, I can't even imagine that process.
Yeah.
I mean, the Latin process, the Western Latin and all that stuff where, you know, it's essentially English characters. And
right.
The Scandinavian and German. Anything that's... that type of letter style. I can't remember what that is. It's Latin, but there's another word for it as well. That type of letter style, that I understand. Like your shapes and symbols and all that stuff are all based off the same core set.
Right. Yeah, the little and accent then they expand on to, it or add yeah. some type of special character to it or a little filigree that adds to it that changes it in a different language.
Yeah, yeah. That I get. It's when you get to... And actually, even Cyrillic I get because those shapes are still, but it's when you get to like Asian language sets where it's, you know, kanji based and you've got, you know, the Chinese language, which, you know, is an easy translation into the Japanese language because the Japanese language, that kanji set is very heavily based off the Chinese version. But then you've got Thai and you've got, you know, Vietnamese and you've got Korean and all those are completely different and weird variations and things that build out. And my brain just does not with I don't know how you do that without being a native speaker and native.
Well, exactly. So he actually partners with people who are familiar with that language and actually develop character sets for those typefaces there.
That makes a lot more sense.
Right. Yeah. So I hate to try to learn a different language so I can like design a typeface. That'll be something completely.
I'm just going to go with, I don't really want to learn how to design a typeface. Like I know my limits. There are certain things I'm never going to be great at. I don't really have an interest in doing it. Designing the typeface is one of those.
Right. Plus one on that one. So that's one of the things I do. You know, I bring in some of my experts like Mike, or, you know, we actually did a session on how to be a better design researcher. So actually how to like ask better questions of your users so you can design better products for them. So that's some of the things I do as a guild member. Design Craft Guild member. And then I also run a design thinking, what we call a chapter. And that's really for anyone within HR that wants to really understand how to apply design thinking within their day-to-day work. So I run a chapter for them. And again, I bring in more subject matter experts that have, they do this day-to-day practice, but we mainly focus on HR because we're not product people. We don't do day-to-day product. And so for them to really be able to like feel invested in the chapter meetups, you know, we try to make sure that the topics are focused around how to apply this within the HR, your HR work there.
Okay. Within those workshops and within the guild and within all that stuff, are you focusing on working in a digital space, or are you doing any craft stuff by hand where you're, you know, using those elements to kind of put people in a different mindset to allow them to develop?
It's mainly in the digital space for my day-to-day work at IBM, because of, you know, we're IBM, we're a technology company. So.
Sure.
It's like, so, you know, a lot of the work that we're doing is, you know, focused on digital. It's absolutely focused on how to, you know, build in cognitive and AI into our day-to-day work to make HR more predictive of in the services. And so that's what a lot of the work that we're doing there is going toward.
Okay. I was curious about that because there's a lot of tech companies that I've seen that are making a conscious shift to kind of reacquaint their design teams with pen and paper and collage and things like that. Even if there's something that's never going to be technically used in their product, it's just I think it's a new way to create a different empathy for process.
Right. Yeah. We, you know, sometimes in the guild, we don't do it as often as I would like to. But I have a responsibility to their managers as well to make sure that they are on their game as far as getting their work done.
Sure.
But you know, every now and then we will do something that is more, I guess, like hand crafting to help them, you know, just get those muscles working again, and not just their hand muscles, but even just their brain muscles.
Yeah.
To think in, you know, how can I iterate without getting stuck into the computer automatically there, you know? So yeah, we do some of those muscle memory exercises every now and then just to loosen them up. But you know, of course, you know, we'll get back into like the digital practices as well too.
Okay. Well, I'm the reason I was asking is cause I've got a couple of friends who work over at Facebook in there, and I don't know, I can never remember what their team is where they do all the stuff by hand and, you know, then take that into the product in different ways. But you know, their whole goal behind that from talking to them was not to have people creating craft and hand done products that they were going to use on Facebook. It was to give them a opportunity to take a step back and reevaluate the way they looked at things. Hmm. So it offered them an opportunity to, I guess, mentally give them a break and a reset. To reprocess things.
Right.
So,
right.
So, you know, and with you specifically, why I was asking that question is because you're, again, we're roughly the same age. And you came up in a time where there was still a ton of hand-drawn stuff. It wasn't, I mean, it's not, we're talking about the days of, you know, where everything was paste ups with Ruby Lith and Amber Lith and all that, but you still had to do mock-ups and you still had to do, you know, paste ups on boards and things like that. And that doesn't happen much anymore. So it's, I don't want to say it's a lost skill, but it's, especially when you get into entirely digital products and things like that, there is a different way of thinking about those. And I was wondering how personally that affected you.
Yeah, you know, it's, I think that for me personally, if I didn't do the outside work that I do, which is a lot of screen printing and hand done things, I think I would go mad. because I still enjoy those things. I enjoy getting on the you know, I actually, I gave you a great example. I was working with a designer in the studio who's doing a side project, and he was trying to distress type. And he was like, his first question to me was, hey, do you know any filters I can distress type in? And I was like, well, no, not really. But you can like just kind of print that out and then just take it to the Xerox machine and just kind of like play with it on the Xerox machine and just kind of like distress the type that way. He's like, really? He's like, yeah. Like, and I just grabbed, I took him over to there was a group of two young ladies and him, and I showed them. It's like, all right, so first, you know, like you scale it up, you scale it down, you scale it up, and you scale it down. And there's like, oh my gosh. And I was like, I didn't realize there was so much detail in this thing that, you know, that it loses its integrity as you keep scanning it over and over again. It's like, yeah, it's like, this is awesome, right? It's like, and they just, I swear, I left, I did that like around lunchtime. And when I left, I went by the machine to pick up a printout and they were still there playing with type. I was like,
oh, I may have created a monster.
Yeah.
Or you could just simply do what I do a lot, and I will, I'll take a typeface. And if I want to distress it, I literally take it off the printer. I crumple up the piece of paper.
Yes.
I put it back on there and I scan it in. And it's just, you know, especially if it's like fresh off the printer where the toner hasn't like completely adhered, you know, and cooled down, it'll get those creases and flakes and stuff. And that's what I do a lot of time.
Yeah, I still do that as well, too. Or you just kind of like rub it up against something rough just to like, oh, like a rough floor surface just to kind of like break it up. And yeah, so many ways to do things organically that, you know, that just don't really get a chance to do, or we don't really think about anymore.
Sure.
In day-to-day practice.
Yeah. Well, since you brought it up, let's talk about the stuff that you do on the side with the screen printing and different things. Is this client work? Is this just for you? What are you doing?
A lot of it's for me now. Because of my busy schedule between AIGA and working at IBM, I've actually tapered off a lot of my freelance work. And but I still do some side stuff just for fun. And actually, even, you know, even for IBM, I actually got the opportunity to do a series of posters for one of the programs I used to run, which was called IBM Global Design Week. And that program was me traveling around to different sites around the world for IBM and teaching design thinking to teams. And
Siri's listening.
And so as a part of that, you know, I am empathetic that a lot of these teams are giving up a week of their time to spend a week with me to teach them design thinking. And I want to, you know, give them something for, you know, spending that week with me. Mm-hmm. And so the first workshop I did was in Bubligen, Germany. And I did a hand six screen poster for that site that was based off of Bubligen. So every single poster that I did was based off the landmarks and the geography of the country that I was visiting there. And I, you know, I gave it to them at the end of the workshop. You know, I said, thank you. You know, you spent a long week with me. I really appreciate the time. I hope you got a lot out of the workshop. Here's a gift to you for, as you know, hopefully this will help you remember, you know, what you got out of this workshop. And literally about maybe that particular workshop, about a year later, a business manager who participated in that workshop just out of the blue just emailed me. It's like, hey, I just turned around and I saw your poster on my door And it reminded me how great that workshop session was. And I was like, I'm just really want to let you know that it's like, I'm still using what you trained me in that workshop. That's like, wow, I couldn't have asked for a better like comment than that.
Sure. So do you find with your personal stuff that your style has changed after working in, you know, in an agency setting for IBM and different places? Do you find your personal style has changed because of those?
I don't know if it's because of IBM or if it's because of influences. You know, I've over the past several years, I've been heavily influenced by a lot of just, you know, great Japanese graphic design. And I really love how simple a lot of the design work is. But I think also too, in parallel to that, because of my work schedule and how busy I am and not really being like a, I guess, quote unquote, like day-to-day craft working designer in my day-to-day work, I find that I have to like, you know, I don't know if shortcuts is the best word for it, but I had to find ways to like get that creativity out in a simple way that conveys the idea and it conveys the right tone and value that I want within that design. But I still feel pleased with it when I, you know, release it out to the world as well too.
Sure. So with the hand-on stuff that you do for yourself, how would you classify your style? Because I looked through your site and there was, I don't want to say there was a consistent theme, but it was very interesting to me. It was like there were a lot of things that I could pick up on where if there was a gallery showing of all that stuff and you lined it all up, you know, you would definitely be able to tell the same person did all of it.
I don't know. I'm actually interested in how you describe it.
I'm trying to find the right word. I'm stalling.
Yeah, well, it's hard to say. I've never really. It's interesting because I actually just put together to get my design principle assignment at IBM. I had to put together a portfolio packet of my work, and the one thing that's not in that packet is about the work itself. It's about the accomplishments of the work because we're in a day-to-day business work. So that's what they care about with that work. So but that's the thing I would say that's probably missing from that book is like what, I guess, style or, you know, how would I describe that work? And that's a good question. I've never really took a step back to think about it. Put a pin on it.
Yeah, there was a lot of stuff that while it was screen printed and designed, it had enough texture to it that it felt very hand done. It didn't feel like you were just going into Illustrator, drawing a bunch of stuff out, and then outputting things. It felt very crafted and very well thought over, but there was enough touch of a person's hand in it that it still felt organic.
That's perfect. that's a great descriptor for me because I actually now that
feel free to use
that,
it.
No, I was like, thank you. Now that I when you said that, I think about the work that I've done over the years, and I started out in more of the traditional fine arts path. And I've always been into detail. I've always loved detail, but I've never been really, I'm not a realistic artist by any means, but I've always been aware of, the shade is transitioning here. And, it's those little things that some people pick up on and other people just don't pick up on. Those are the things that, those little details, those craft details are the things that I stay up to 2 or 3 o'clock in the morning to like to make sure it's in the design.
Sure. Um,
just to make sure that I am happy with it, but also it's capturing that level of detail that I think is important for the viewer to take away from it as well too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can definitely see that within it. So is that a good stress reliever for you? Because I find myself like the harder of a week that I have, the less I want to do design wise or art wise when I get home at the end of the night. And then the weeks where it's more administrative and like this past couple of weeks, I've been stuck doing budgets, you know, every designer's favorite thing. And, you know, there's a lot more creativity that is flowing through me at that time, or a lot more desire to create my own things at that point.
I would say probably I've never really, you know, if I am working on something, I think it's really about the project that I'm working on. If it's something that I really want to work on, I'm willing to, you know, stay up late or, you know, squeeze it in between, you know, on my lunch to like do a little bit more work on, or, you know, the willingness to you know, as soon as I get home, do what I need to do to finish up work and then jump to that. I will, you know, stick to it. I will dedicate time to it. And you know, definitely I've had those days where, you know, I haven't been able to really touch the computer all day long, and I'm more of mentoring my, you know, either people on my team or other people within the studio. I find those things actually pump me up to like, oh man, especially when I see a designer that's got better work than I do. And I'm like, oh, I need to get my A game on.
I write a fine line with that. If they are a lot better than me, I'm just like, oh crap, I'm never going to be as good as them. I turn into Eeyore. And then if they're just a little bit better than me, I'm like, yeah, I better pump up my game. I can do better than that.
Yeah.
That's my line. If they're a lot better than me, I'm just like, oh, shit.
I'll never do that. Just admit to it.
Yep. So it's been interesting doing this podcast because I talk to a lot of people who are just leaps and bounds, and I'm never have any hope of being as talented or as creative as them. Mm. And it's certainly knocked my ego that I had before down several pegs, where now I'm excited to see their stuff instead of just going, I'm never going to be as good as them. So, well, we're getting kind of close to our time here, but I'm curious, you know, this will be a multi-parter as far as what you have coming up, because you've got, you know, IBM. I'm wondering what you can talk about there that you've got that's rolling out. And then, you know, on the personal work front of the screen printing and things like that, what exciting you've got coming up for yourself.
Oh, wow. So I would say on the work front, we're doing a lot of, we're doing a lot of work that we're wanting to, you know, definitely like share out with the world. I sit as a stakeholder and advisor on a team that work on things such as mentoring all of our, you know, all of the 2000 plus designers that we've hired over the past 5 years at IBM, as well as helping with, you know, portfolio of experience and different things like that, and career journey at IBM, which is, you know, new for designers. So we have a lot of those things that we're working on internally. And the great thing about the work that we're doing is that we will eventually and hopefully soon, you know, release a lot of that work out to the world, like open source it. So that's a lot of great work that's hopefully coming soon. And then on the AIGA front, locally here in Austin, we are full steam ahead in the fall, and we got tons of great programming coming up, from, you know, our regular happy hours, that one's actually coming up soon. And our big programs that we have coming up is, one is that Changemaker program that I mentioned to you earlier. We're actually going to do the showcase of that work, which will be public, coming in the end of September. And then after that, we have a couple people coming in town. Mr. French, Brian French from French Paper is coming to town for his French 150 Roadshow.
Yeah, I know Brian.
Yeah. So everyone knows Brian. I mean, it's like...
Yeah, it's true.
So yeah, they're coming to Austin for their French 150 Roadshow. And then probably at the wrap up, the beginning of fall, before we get into, you know, too much of the holiday season, we're actually going to be celebrating our new AIGA fellows that we've just honored here in Austin here as well too. So we have David Campa, who's with Megara Jesse, and Herman Dow, who's with Paige Dow, have been selected as our new AIGA fellows for the Austin area.
Very cool. Well, Owen, before I let you go, where can people find you online?
So I'm in a couple places. I will say probably the best place to keep up with me is my Instagram account, which is oen.hammonds, H-A-M-M-O-N-D-S, is the most up-to-date work. And then I also have a website, which is visualnotepad.org, is the my other website, website that's kind of got some older work on there, but it's actually getting ready to get refreshed soon. So stay tuned for that.
Very cool. And we'll link to all this stuff in the show notes as well, so people can find it. Well, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me. I really appreciate it. And go out and hug some necks.
All right. Thanks a lot, Jason. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. You can find out more about Owen on Twitter at Visual Notepad, and be sure to check out the links in the show notes for more ways to keep up with him. You can keep up with the podcast on Twitter and Facebook at Creative SO Pod, and follow Creative South on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Creative South GA, over at creativesouth.com. And I'm at Jay Frostholm on Dribbble, Twitter, and Instagram. Jack Prince is giving Creative South podcast listeners 15% off all orders over $25 when you use promo code CREATE15CS at checkout. Visit jackprince.com for your next order of stickers, prints, or whatever you need today.
For a limited time, new Skillshare customers can get their first 3 months for just 99 cents to get unlimited access to thousands of classes when you sign up at Skillshare.com using promo code Creative South. What are you waiting for? Start learning today. And remember, if you like the show, help support us over at patreon.com/creativesouth. And if you like the Creative South podcast, head over to iTunes, Stitcher, or Google Play Music. Rate us and leave a review. This helps more people find the podcast and allows us to keep getting awesome guests. Now go out and hug some necks.